Reminder, today is Wednesday, September the 7th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, the presidential race is tightening.
CNN came out with a big poll. Their big poll came out today that Trump is winning. It's good psychology, you know.
Scientists say an earthquake in the U.S. state of Oklahoma was man-made. How the Palestinian economy would be different if it had statehood. Also ahead, a big breakup and big news network shakeup. It's all on today's International Edition. Well, Donald Trump won the endorsement of 88 retired generals and admirals on Tuesday, who said they believe he will rebuild the country's military and secure its borders. The Republican candidate spoke to a mostly pro-military crowd in Virginia Beach, where he took a jab at his Democratic rival Hillary Clinton, saying Russia's president would welcome a Clinton win.
Putin looks at Hillary Clinton and he smiles. Boy, would he like to see her. That would be easy. Because just look at her decisions. Look how bad her decisions have been. Virtually every decision she's made has been a loser.
But Trump suffered a major blow when the traditionally conservative Dallas Morning newspaper refused to endorse him for president. It's the first time since 1964 the paper has not endorsed the Republican nominee. Clinton, meanwhile, campaigning in Tampa, Florida Tuesday, fired off a litany of reasons why she believes Trump should not be president. She reminded voters of his public feud with the parents of a Muslim American soldier killed by a suicide bomber in Iraq. Clinton also called it mind-boggling that Trump has hinted at using nuclear weapons against terrorists, saying he has no clue what he's talking about.
I think there is so much in his political and public life that deserves to be examined. I am going to concentrate on what will affect the American people were he ever to get anywhere near the White House, because as I've said repeatedly, he is unqualified to be president and temperamentally unfit to be commander-in-chief.
But the race for the White House is tightening. A new CNN ORC poll Tuesday shows Trump edging ahead of Clinton 45% to 43%. While other national polls do give Clinton about a three-point lead, VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has details on why the polls may be tightening.
The race is tightening in part because Clinton's weaknesses are in the spotlight, says expert Stephen Wayne.
There are a number of people who don't think that she is honest and trustworthy. She seems to be a very authentic politician in an anti-politician age.
But Trump also suffers from high disapproval ratings, says Gallup pollster Frank Newport.
It's troublesome for both people. I think the Hillary Clinton campaign thinks about it a lot. How can we change her image? But that's hard to do. You know, it's kind of baked in at this point.
Clinton hopes to hold on to what was a big lead in the polls after the party conventions, helped in part by a number of Trump controversies, says analyst Jeremy Mayer.
It is possible that Donald Trump will win this race, but in order to do so, he will have to come back from a larger deficit than any presidential candidate in the modern era of polling. No one has come back as far, as quickly as he now needs to do.
Trump and Clinton are already preparing for the next major event in the race, the first presidential debate set for September 26th. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
Well, now let's turn to what's happening in social media today with G. Abby Lee. Hi, G. What are people talking about? I know they're saying a lot about the president's historic visit to Laos.
Hi, Lori. Twitter and Facebook users are using hashtag Obama in Laos to talk about his trip. And the big story on social media is that he pledged $90 million to Laos to clear unexploded bombs.
So did the president tweet about his visit?
You bet. He tweeted this Monday. Sabaidi Laos. Honored to be the first U.S. president to visit Laos and begin a new partnership between our countries. More than 21,000 people like that tweet, and he's on Twitter at POTUS. That's P-O-T-U-S. And during a press conference, Mr. Obama said, the U.S. has a moral obligation to help Laos heal.
All right. Well, it sounds like a good plan. Mm-hmm. Let's move on to another topic. I know Wednesday's a big day, very exciting for folks who are
Big Apple fans.
Apple fans.
That's correct. Right. And that's because the electronics giant is set to release the iPhone 7. There are two main things that people on social media are talking about, and that's that the new model will not have a headphone jack, and it will at least be water-resistant, if not waterproof, altogether. What do you think about the no headphone jack change?
You know, I'm not really sure because I don't use mine too much. Now, I am intrigued by the water-resistant feature because I have lost a few iPhones that way.
I know it. I mean, that's something that people don't argue about, right? I mean,
right.
It has to be a good thing. But about the headphone jack, people are really arguing on social media. Some people are saying that it's a pretty arrogant move on the part of Apple, and other people still argue that, no, that's the way it will be in the future. And one Twitter user wrote that no headphone jack is a new no physical keyboard. Do you remember the times when we had to actually punch in the buttons to type? But we don't have that anymore. And he also argued Apple competitors will laugh, advertise their old tech, and then eventually adopt the new technology.
I'd say that's probably right. What else is trending?
Well, this one is from France. And sadly, the world's first person to undergo a face transplant died at the age of 49. The patient had the surgery back in 2005, and since then, more than 20 face transplants have been completed around the world. That's all for me today. Lori?
All right. Thanks so much, G. You can follow her at G. Abby Lee. We also invite you to follow the International Edition stream at VOA_IE. Here are some of the stories we're following at voanews.com. Syrian civilians despair as peace prospects evaporate. Myanmar's Aung San Suu Kyi to visit the U.S. next week. Jewish prophet's tomb at risk from IS in Iraq. Wonder Kids, preteens enter universities in Canada and the U.S. And Bill Clinton, first gentleman. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. International Edition continues. President Barack Obama continues his trip to Laos, where Tuesday he talked about how the United States is more engaged in the Asia-Pacific region than it has been in decades.
As some of you know, as president, a key priority of my foreign policy has been to deepen our engagement with the nations and peoples of the Asia Pacific. And here on the final leg of my last visit to Asia as president, I want to discuss why the commitment of the United States to this region will endure for the long term.
Well, Obama said that the region will become more important in the future, and he pledged to push for the passage of the Trans-Pacific Partnership Free Trade Agreement. Critics argue the deal will eliminate jobs in the United States. The president also met with the Laos president and announced a three-year, $90 million contribution for their efforts to clear the bombs dropped by U.S. forces in the 1960s and 70s. About a third of the 2.2 million bombs dropped on Laos remain undetonated, and the lingering threat has slowed development in the country.
The remnants of war continue to shatter lives here in Laos. Many of the bombs that were dropped were never exploded. Over the years, thousands of Laotians have been killed or injured. Farmers tending their fields, children playing. The wounds, a missing leg or arm, last a lifetime. And that's why, as president, I've dramatically increased our funding to help remove these unexploded bombs.
Well, Obama is attending the Asian Summit and the East Asia Summit this week. Now turning to the Middle East, a new report by the United Nations Conference on Trade and Development is contending that the Palestinian economy would be twice as large as it is now if there were no Israeli occupation of Palestinian territories. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva on the report, which says the Palestinians would have a booming economy if they became an independent state.
UNCTAD argues the Palestinian territories have all the makings of a viable state, but cannot reach their potential as long as they remain occupied territories. Mahmoud El-Kafif is UNCTAD's coordinator for assistance to the Palestinian people. He says the cost of occupation is substantial, but acknowledges there is no systematic way of measuring this cost.
All of this is actually on the conservative side. because everybody is scared to be realistic to assess the impact of the Israeli occupation. But if we add up all of these figures, it won't be less than the size of the Palestinian economy. In a sense, without occupation, the Palestinian economy would have been able to produce twice as much as producing today. We are talking about $13 billion.
In assessing the costs of occupation, the UNCTAD study notes more than 66% of grazing land in the West Bank is not accessible to Palestinian producers, costing the Palestinian economy $4.4 billion last year. On Gaza, the report says producers are denied access to half of arable land and 85% of fishery resources. El Kafif says this is taking a toll on the lives of the Palestinian people. Poverty has increased and unemployment in all of the occupied territories stands at 25%.
Unemployment in Gaza actually is about 38%. Food insecurity affects two-thirds of the Palestinian population.
UNCTAD economists consider trade to be the cornerstone upon which economic development can be built. They argue for the establishment of a systematic, rigorous, and comprehensive way of assessing the ongoing economic cost of occupation. Last month, the United States rebuked Israel for the Jewish state's plans to accelerate the building of settlements in the West Bank in the face of mounting international concern. The U.S. has urged Israel and the Palestinians to take meaningful steps to build trust, but Israel has instead promoted the building of thousands of new settlement homes. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Well, federal regulators have shut down 17 wastewater disposal wells on Native American tribal land in the northeastern Oklahoma state following a weekend earthquake that matched the state's strongest on record. Now, because the wells are located on Native American tribal land, Oklahoma regulators have no jurisdiction over oil and gas producing facilities in the region. The quake was highly unusual for the state. Joining us to talk about it, Peter Glick, co-founder and chief scientist at the Pacific Institute in Oakland, California. Thanks so much for being with us, Peter. We're hearing this quake was essentially man-made due to fracking and the injection of wastewater back into the ground.
Without a doubt, the earthquake this week and the set of earthquakes over the last year or two are remarkably unusual for Oklahoma. Oklahoma is not known for its earthquakes. And what we've seen in the last few years, and I think what we saw this week, is what we call induced seismicity, that is, earthquakes caused by human activities. And in this case, the human activities are in particular, the injection deep underground of wastewater produced by fracking and the production of oil and gas. We've been injecting more and more wastewater that gets produced when we're producing oil and gas back underground under pretty high pressure. And it's pretty clear now that that's what's causing this big increase in earthquakes in Oklahoma.
Does it sort of change the landscape to where it will be more prone to earthquakes in the future?
Well, certainly in the short run, we've seen an earthquake increase in that region, and there's going to continue to be an increase in seismicity, even if we were to stop right away in injecting this wastewater, which I don't think we're going to do, because the wastewater we've already injected has added stress to the geological formations, and that's going to be a problem for some years to come. Now, in the long run, I think they'd better get pretty serious about, first of all, improving our understanding of what these risks are, and then probably finding another way to dispose of these very large volumes of wastewater from fracking and from traditional oil and gas production. And Oklahoma is apparently pretty sensitive to this. And in Pennsylvania, for example, they recycle the vast majority of this kind of wastewater. They don't reinject it. And Oklahoma at the moment reinjects it. And I think it's going to require some rethinking of that policy.
What exactly is fracking?
So fracking is a method of stimulating the production of oil or natural gas by injecting under high pressure water and other chemicals to basically fracture the geological formation to free up the oil or gas. And in this case, there's been a tremendous increase in fracking in Oklahoma and in Wyoming and in Pennsylvania and other parts of the United States. But it's not the fracking, we think, that's actually causing these earthquakes. It's the reinjection of the wastewater that we get with the oil and gas. We get oil and gas from these wells, but it turns out we get a lot of wastewater also. In fact, often many times more wastewater than oil and gas. And they've got to do something with that wastewater. And in Oklahoma and in other parts of the country, what they do is they reinject that wastewater under very high pressure. And the feeling is that it's that wastewater reinjection that's causing these induced earthquakes. It's not necessarily the fracking operations itself, which involves much less water and much less pressure.
That doesn't sound like it would be very eco-friendly in and of itself to put wastewater back into the earth.
Oh, there are all sorts of problems in addition to this problem of induced earthquakes associated with the reinjection of this wastewater. We finished a very comprehensive assessment about a year ago for the state of California, looking at the risks of hydraulic fracking and wastewater reinjection. And one of the biggest risks we found was, in fact, the possibility of contaminating groundwater resources when we reinject this nasty stuff back underground. You know, we use groundwater for all sorts of things. And in Oklahoma, they use it for irrigation. In California, we use it for irrigation. We don't try and contaminate groundwater, of course. When they reinject this stuff, they try to be careful and not reinject it into water resources that we might be using in the future. But that's not always the case. There is contamination sometimes. And I really think in the long run, they're going to have to think about other ways of dealing with this wastewater that don't cause earthquakes and that don't threaten the quality of water resources that we really want to use for other purposes.
Pacific Institute Chief Scientist Peter Glick, thanks for being with us. We appreciate it. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
I'm Victor Beatty. Since 1942, the Voice of America has been a consistently reliable and authoritative source of news. Today, VOA remains committed to providing an accurate, objective, and comprehensive news product at the top of every hour, every day. We can be heard on your local affiliate or streamed on the web at voanews.com.
Democracy in action. That's what the U.S. presidential election is all about. Who's going to be the new president of the United States come November 8th? Tune in to VOA's coverage of the 2016 presidential election. Reports, expert analysis, and more. Professional, up-to-the-minute coverage that can't be found anywhere else. Right here on VOA.
This is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, a DJ who's making it big, producing music hits. But first, there is no shortage of entertainment news today, including a big shakeup at Fox News Channel. Let's talk about it with Entertainment Tonight's senior news editor, Jennifer Peros. Hi, Jen. What's the latest?
Two big pieces of news from Fox News Channel today. You know, first, they actually started the day with an announcement that they had settled a lawsuit with Gretchen Carlson, who, of course, was the first anchor woman to come out publicly and say that Roger Ailes had, you know, allegedly sexually harassed her in the workplace. So it kind of started back in July, and now it's settled today that they've actually settled a lawsuit with her for $20 million. And then just minutes later, news broke that one of their top nightly news anchors, Greta Van Susteren, is actually going to be leaving the network as well. So, of course, now everybody is kind of thinking, you know, what's going on with Greta? Did she experience some sexual harassment along with Gretchen and 20 other women that we are hearing who are about to come out of the woodwork? So, you know, Greta's husband actually gave a comment this morning in an interview saying, you know, we definitely will see some litigation and some public fighting pretty soon between Greta and the network. So, again, a lot of speculation now starting again. Who's going to be the next woman to come out? Will it be Greta Van Susteren? And then now a lot of people are also asking, will Bill O'Reilly and Sean Hannity walk off after their contracts are done just in a couple of months?
Why would the men like Bill O'Reilly, who've made such a name for themselves, want to walk away? I mean, I can't imagine they were sexually harassed.
Well, listen, so Roger Ailes, he actually brought in Sean Hannity and Bill O'Reilly. So now that Roger Ailes is out, Sean and Bill's contracts they basically go null and void once those contracts expire. So they will have to sign on to new terms, new money, new contract. So a lot of people are saying, you know, the two of them just kind of want to distance themselves from Fox News Channel, start fresh and start on their own without Roger Ailes.
The Greta Van Susteren, I think that news was a big surprise. She's been there, what, 14 years, something like that?
She's been there 14 years. Of course, she had the primetime spot at 7 p.m. You know, Britt Hume is actually going to take over that slot starting immediately through the election. You know, and Van Susteren, she reportedly tried to renegotiate her contract after Roger did resign, and she opted to leave when the negotiations failed. So from what we're hearing, it was just a contract thing. It didn't end up on bad terms. But if it ended on good terms, I couldn't see why they wouldn't let her finish it out.
Right. I saw she had said something like it just didn't feel the same for the past couple of years.
But a lot of the women that are coming out publicly now and saying, you know, the network has changed in the past couple of years. We didn't feel safe working in this environment. You know, and there's some other anchors who we are hearing now that are also going through lawsuits.
That's some big stuff right there.
It's crazy. You know, I think a lot more about the story is going to come out in the next couple of months. You know, everyone now thinks it's dead, thinks it's over, but I really don't think so.
Be interesting. Well, another thing that seems to be dead is Taylor Swift's latest relationship.
Latest relationship. I mean, I feel like we've been here, same place, same girl talking about the same kind of relationship.
Right.
But yeah, Taylor Swift and Tom Hiddleston, they are done. You know, sources are telling ET that Taylor was the one who actually decided to pull the plug. Mainly because she is the one that wanted to be more private. It started very quickly, and now it's ending just after 3 months. And we are told that, you know, it was an intense start. Nobody really could kind of keep that momentum going. But she was the one that actually pulled a plug and said, listen, you know, I just want something more low-key and private, which is very unlikely for Taylor Swift. So, yeah, you know, rumor has it that Tom Hiddleston was in this relationship just because he wants to be the next James Bond. It should be interesting to see if he actually gets it. If Taylor Swift does what she normally does, she'll probably write a song and they'll never talk to each other again.
I was just gonna say, well, hopefully we'll at least get a good song out of it.
We'll definitely get a good album out of this one, I'm sure.
All right. Well, we appreciate it as always. Entertainment Tonight senior news editor Jennifer Perros. Flume, that's his name, the latest disc jockey to find success in producing music hits. VOA Border Crossings host Larry London joins International Edition Sarah Williams to talk about Flume's albums.
If you were to say the name Harley Stretton, most people around the world would say, who?
Yeah.
But when you say Flume, the typical response is, oh, yes, the electronic dance music DJ producer who is on the charts right now in the top 20 with his latest hit and a song that has become his very first platinum hit called Never Be Like You. That's who Flume is, and he's currently on tour promoting his second album, Skin. He was just here in Washington over the weekend. Two sold-out shows at the 930 Club, and I even interviewed him for Border Crossings.
So who is this guy?
Well, he's an up-and-coming electronic music producer. Right now in the music world, that seems to be the current trend. At least here in the United States, it's been around for the last few years, with groups like Skrillex and Diplo and Jack U. And then there's the more established names like Calvin Harris and David Guetta. But Flume is a new star on the rise. He's very popular in Australia, where he's from. In fact, he won the Australian Recording Industry Association Award for Best Artist of the Year and Best Producer of the Year, and he was nominated for a handful of them. And his new song is quite popular. It features a young, up-and-coming Canadian singer. If we don't have enough Canadian
enough
singers
Canadians,
already.
Yeah.
Her name is Kai, or at least that's what she goes by. So let's listen to Flume and Kai and the new song, which is out right now. And I hope you enjoy this single.
What I would do to take away this fear of being loved, allegiance to the pain. Now I'm messed up and I'm missing you.
We've talked about this before, but a lot of DJs, you know, like you mentioned, Calvin Harris are getting involved in recording now.
Everybody, you know, it's electronica. That's what's going on. All of the EDM dance music producers are creating music, and Flume is the latest in the list of many that have come out in the last couple of years. When he was on Border Crossings, which you will be hearing in the near future on the show, he talks about why EDM is so popular, and at least he reflects on why he thinks it's popular in the United States. It's been around for a long time throughout Europe. DJ Sammy had a hit back in the early 90s called Heaven. There have been a lot of DJs, club DJs, make a lot of money. Calvin Harris, top Forbes list for DJs this year, $63 million he made it a year.
Not bad.
No, not a bad day's work. And so Flume is on the rise right now. And as I say, this song is platinum with Kai, who is the newest Canadian artist on the scene. Her real name is Alicia De Gasperis. And she chose the name Kai. She said it's Japanese for change. And that's kind of what she wants to reflect. But the single is called Never Be Like You. He's just recorded a new song with Tove Lo, who's a Swedish singer, who's also is on the rise right now. And he's done remixes of artists like Adele and Lorde and Sam Smith. His music is quite popular. In the club world, he's very, very popular. And on the charts, he's just starting to make his mark and on the rise right now for the album Skin. I'm only human, can't you see? I made a mistake. Please just look me in my face. Tell me everything's okay. Cause I got it. Ooh, I'll never be like you. I'm only human, can't you see? I made a mistake. Please just look me in my face. Tell me everything's okay.
Well, you have been listening to International Edition. We are glad you could join us. You can find us anytime at voanews.com. Follow me at Lori London with a U. Thanks so much again for being here. And thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Jimmy Cook. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The skies of North America today provide the backdrop for celebrating a century of conservation of one group of Earth's most treasured animals, migratory birds. On August 16, 1916, the United States and Great Britain, on behalf of Canada, signed the first migratory bird treaty, known in Canada as a convention, to protect these shared natural resources. The treaty was the first international agreement forged to protect wild birds and among the first to protect any wildlife species. The Migratory Bird Treaty is the foundation for significant achievements in bird conservation that followed, with both nations enacting statutes to implement its provisions. In 1917, the Canadian Parliament passed the Migratory Bird Convention Act. In 1918, the U.S. Congress followed suit, passing the Migratory Bird Treaty Act. In subsequent years, the United States signed similar treaties with Mexico, Japan, and Russia. Our two countries' conservation efforts have yielded real results, especially for waterfowl populations. I am proud of the work we have done, but as the recent release of the State of North America's Birds Report has shown, we have a challenging road ahead, said Catherine McKenna, Minister of Environment and Climate Change Canada. I know we are up to the task, and I look forward to building on our successes, together to recover our migratory bird species. It's hard to imagine the North American continent without egrets, ducks, hawks, or songbirds. But at the turn of the 20th century, that's the way things were looking, said Dan Ash, director of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, which has responsibility for conserving and managing migratory birds and their habitats across the United States. This treaty marked a turning point in the fate of our shared bird life, and it continues to this day to unite efforts in the United States and Canada to protect our shared birds across our international boundaries.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at voanews.com/editorials.
for